Welcome to Backlog Dialogues, the podcast where we dig you out of your backlog before it buries you. I'm John, and joining me as always are two carnival game stall owners at the local summer festival.
I'm not crooked.
Most of my takoyaki has precisely zero octopus in it.
Who are you?
I'm Matt.
He's the takoyaki man.
Who are you?
Who are you?
Jared?
Yes?
Answer the damn question.
You answered it for me. Therefore, the plan worked.
One of these days, Jared. One of these days.
You'll have to reach out pretty far to get at me. Just saying.
Anyway, today we are covering chapters 4 through 6 of Onikakushi. It is a lot of nonsense and then a bit of spooky is the best way I have of putting it.
Yep.
A lot of nonsense, bit of spooky. Good description of the early part of any arc.
Yeah. Good point.
I think Onikakushi has the most amount of slice of life nonsense.
Oh, no.
Of any of the arcs.
I would disagree with that.
John just instantly disagreeing. It's great.
Oh, interesting.
It is the one where they are most blatant about doing the slice of life stuff, but every single arc is going to take time to really put a lot of upfront character work that is also slice of life.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I think we've mentioned before that, honestly, the story needs this to breathe. I remember I was getting to a point where by the time we got to chapter 6, I was kind of tapping my foot waiting for things to happen.
And I will say, I had that kind of impression, too. First time I read one of these when I was going through the start of Umineko, and I will return to that thought way later in the series.
Yep.
To me, it's an interesting experience. I'm not the only one this is true for, but as I'm reading it actively right before, like, I'm actually just kind of keeping just ahead right now. And this is my first time reading the novel, but I know so many other versions of the story, so I kind of have a different reaction I'm going to say later in this episode.
Yeah. Hmm. So let's get right into it. Chapter 4 starts with its physical education hour.
I love Keiichi starts talking. This can't be really good for educational standards. We all just kind of fuck around and do what we want.
Yeah. That's kind of what these school is anyway, is they will, like, the kids kind of teach each other to try and take some of the stress off the teacher, who I don't
know the name
of yet.
Yeah, that, and even worse than other forms of education, physical education, you can't just line up kids of massively different age and just make them compete or work with each other. So,
yeah, last time they kind of talked about it, but we didn't really mention it, that Mion kind of insists that there's very different standards for education for country versus city.
Yep.
In the country, yeah, you can get into some kind of university even if you slack off. It's not a big deal. And Cage is like, yeah, I went to cram school. What the heck?
Yeah, and he has deep resentment for the cram school, may I add.
Yep. Naturally, because they literally have to make their own PE, the board game club decides to turn this into a competition with zombie tag.
Because I think we already decided there's nothing they won't turn into a competition.
Oh, yeah. It's the best thing about this group of kids, really, is that, like, they will always and forever make sure that they are turning something into a competition. It's great. I love them.
Yeah.
That being said, like, most of the first half of this chapter is just the whole zombie tag thing, and we can talk about that a bit more in the discussion section.
It really gets into the full, like, these are just some absolutely weird non sequiturs and tactics they're going into, like the extended Gundam reference.
Oh, yes. Mion and Rena end up winning. Rena just survives the school bell, and Mion tricks everyone into thinking she was a zombie. I kind of love that.
It's like, wait, did you tag her? No, I thought you tagged her. It's like, no one ever asks. And I said, I'm going to revisit that later because her plan is shockingly proactive.
Yes. After school, Keiichi goes to help dig out the Colonel Sanders doll.
Desperately afraid that if he doesn't get this done, his friend will start stealing statues from restaurants. I must prevent her from being a criminal.
Yes.
He actually thinks that.
Yep. And on the way, he runs into Tomitake again.
He's like, I saw this girl going by swinging a hatchet.
Or carrying a hatchet anyway.
I think he describes, like, I think he actually kind of can't carefreely, like, swinging along as she goes. And Keiichi, I'm going to say now, with the benefit of spoilers, I think we now learn his true flaw is, what's the term for the fatal flaw of a tragedy?
Tragic flaw, usually.
No, there's a specific, his hamartia.
Okay.
It literally, it's the phrase that means to miss the mark. His is that he can't stop making dark jokes around people who will take him seriously and just throw out weird foreshadowings.
Yeah, Keiichi literally tells him, oh yeah, if you were to be killed out here, she'd probably be the one to do it. Try not to snoop around too much around here.
Is that a warning for outsiders like me? Record scratch.
Yep.
I believe it's like 2 out of 3 days now. He's made jokes in front of this guy. The guy's like, you're talking about serious shit.
Yeah, and he's like, no, I'm just shitposting IRL. Anyway, Keiichi shows up at the site and helps free the statue. They basically just both bond over their shared history of being transfer students. But Rena also kind of like doesn't want to go into her history. Like, she kind of dodges the question about that.
In fact, she very quickly asks Keiichi about his and gets him talking.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's a very classic way to stop talking topic is she changed the subject by turning around on him.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they end up freeing the statue with a lot of effort, but Keiichi breaks the arm with the axe that Rena brought.
Yeah. He's just all this time keeps thinking, it's like, they butchered the body with hand axes and pick axes. One arm wasn't found.
Yeah, yeah. Like, every little bit of spookiness that he experienced last time is just, like, coming back to him.
But, like, Rena's like, I'll just tape up the arm and put a jacket over it. So she's going to dress it.
Yes. Yeah.
There's a great little line at the end when they're bringing it back. Of Keiichi's internal narration. And so, Jack and Jill went down the hill, carrying a human-sized bag and an unsheathed axe. I prayed we wouldn't run into Tomitake-san. If he saw us here and took a picture, we'll need to get rid of him.
Ah! Miraculously, he does not run to Tomitake and make more ominous jokes to get thrown back in his face.
Also, rather than specifically ha, it's a LOL, which I'm guessing in Japanese was probably like a line of W's.
Yeah, or maybe just the wadao kanji.
Yeah, yeah.
You definitely know that better than me, so I couldn't comment.
I have seen precisely one major Nico Nico video in my life, and I know how LOL gets rendered.
Yeah, the W is for wadao, which is to laugh.
Yep. Chapter 5, we learn a little bit about Rena's house at the start.
Good Lord.
She apparently has hordes of cute things. We'll be talking a bit about that a bit more.
Yeah, I kind of want to like just talk about the description of this a little bit. It's like they said, so you went to Rena's house. What do you think? Keiichi's shell-shocked.
It almost seems like the outside is like a statuary of weird things that Rena considers cute.
So describe, it's like rows upon rows of Odysseys, the cake shop mascot, the total mom from the pharmacy. The top of the department store's amazing flying elephants. And apparently some sort of mailbox she stole as she get in trouble for.
Oh, no.
Then her room has the smaller ones.
Yep.
And basically, Cage is like, and then cute kids are locked away in the basement. Tomitake doesn't pop up the window and says, yes, there are big kids missing.
Oh, no. Anyway. Then Keiichi learns about the upcoming village festival, Watanagashi, as well as the club's plans to raise hell at it as a club activity.
This is another time it goes through the unnecessary Rika explains it.
Like, they all go through their nonsense again, and Rika's just like, yeah, we just have fun checking out stalls at the festival. It's fine.
I do like they say, like, Keiichi's expressions are so clear they can actually guess exactly what he's saying.
Yeah. Keiichi has, like, basically... Every single one of his thoughts is like written plain on his face at all times.
Like he was thinking, like they talk, like there's a cotton drifting part of the festival. He starts imagining catching fish and like cooking them. One says, that's just summer camps. Like, how can you tell I was thinking that?
But anyway,
Leon and Rena can read him like a book.
I just love this. Like, we exhibit our skills. We show the full extent of our ability. Rick is like, we're doing club activities while checking out the stalls.
Yes. But anyway, this is a regular club day after school. Let's play president. We can talk a little bit more about president later as well. But the key thing about this is that it is one big moral play.
It's a trick-taking card game.
Yes. When I say moral play, what I mean is...
Keiichi being perverted Icarus.
Yes. This is a karmic morality tale of everyone writes penalties down on slips of paper and the loser has to draw one of them. And when Keiichi goes on a winning streak... It starts to go to his head.
Yeah. So he says all things are things like talk to me in a cutesy way, wear cat ears and a tail.
pat the principal's head.
The principal, who apparently is a Street Fighter character with a jumping fierce.
Yes.
Literally described as the second part. So
in one part, it literally says, oh, no, he's using meter.
But that comes after Keiichi loses.
We learn after several wins that the way to always lose is to challenge Cute Mode Rena.
Yep. Nothing beats Cute Mode Rena. Nothing.
And we'll be discussing this.
I actually called this chapter in my notes, Pride Goeth Before a Fall.
That's a good way of describing it.
Yeah. You can't convince me that Mion didn't palm that last punishment because it's a little too perfect.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, you're probably right. There's no like actual narration about it, but I think you're right.
I mean, at the start, they caught her trying to put in a safe one after a
while. Yeah. I would not be surprised if that happened.
Yep. So
I want to discuss the. I think we should save the consequences of the game discussion.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Because though he gets hit hard.
Yep. Keiichi goes home with Mion, and they run into Tomitake.
Again, because he already made his joke about Rena kidnapping children, he doesn't say in front of Tomitake, so we're safe from things getting worse.
But Tomitake razzes Keiichi for being with another girl already.
So, you know, this is an old man. They say so all the time.
Yep. Mion seems to know Tomitake a little bit, and she drives him off with some snark.
Yeah.
And Keiichi wonders after that discussion if Tomitake is really just here to take pictures.
And Mio knows something. It's like, oh, you have good instincts. Mm-hmm. So she knows something, too. And I do know what she's thinking of. It is kind of a funny switch with Keiichi's dark thoughts and what Mion just is assuming.
Yeah, Mion is clearly not talking about the same thing Keiichi is.
Yep.
But she doesn't say anything more, so.
Yeah. Chapter comes to an end without incident.
Yeah, chapter 5 is very much a game chapter. It's an extended skit of that.
Basically, yeah. Mm-hmm. Then we get to the real meat of this section of reading, which is chapter 6.
This is a big chapter.
Yes.
Yep. So, hey, we finally get to the Watanagashi Festival.
Yeah. After several days of just one day in a row, we jump ahead about 3 to 4 days.
Yep. It's called the Watanagashi 5-Demon Firefight, and it was one of the biggest events in the club, so says the game. Keiichi joins up with the club going out in normal civvies rather than a yukata. The in-story reasoning is that no one wears a yukata, mom, geez. But I also just kind of like, Rikishi probably didn't want to draw all the girls in yukata, just because Shrine made an outfit.
Yeah, just the one. Well, that would be drawing new outfits for all the characters rather than just one.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. And we're on a budget here. Yeah. I'm pretty sure he could have come up with some really cute yukatas for them.
Yeah, I mean, especially later on, I think one of Rikishi's greatest strengths for his character drawings is, in fact, costume design.
Yeah.
He definitely likes to draw unusual outfits.
At the festival, the club hits up all the stands as a bunch of mini competitions.
Oh, these are getting shunted to our competition section.
Yep. Rena decides she wants a contest that doesn't involve eating food, so we get a cute thing scavenger hunt, which is very silly, and we'll discuss a bit later.
Because we're still going on this game streak, they run to Tomitake and they invite him to join the next game.
Yep, which is a shooting gallery stand. It also gets pretty silly. We will discuss a little bit more later.
Kind of have this ongoing escalation of silliness as it goes.
Oh, yes.
Yep. And so after that, we get interrupted by the actual meat of the festival.
Yeah.
What the center of it is, which is the Watanagashi ceremony that Rika has to do.
The team goes into spot to watch. Rika has to do this ceremonial dance where she's wielding a giant ceremonial hoe.
The farming implement for anyone who's going to be immature.
Yeah. And tear open a
thing of, I guess, bundled futons.
A bundle of futons to get all the cotton out. And then everyone takes some cotton and drifts it down the river.
Yeah. It's kind of an interestingly described scene. They make a point of saying how Rika is like, it's very somber, but Rika is clearly struggling. Like, it's way too heavy for her and she's sweating.
Mm-hmm.
The club is sitting there loudly talking about it the whole time. I can't believe no one gets mad at them.
Rena leads Keiichi in the ritual. Part of the whole idea is that it is sort of a sin cleansing ritual where you like send your sins in with the cotton down the river.
Yes. Like, you touch it to yourself and like, it's a ritual matter several places to purify it.
And then your sins for the year have been cleansed and they go back up towards the shrine. But during that process, Keiichi is separated from the club and runs into Tomitake and an unnamed woman, but she has a sprite, so she's clearly important.
feel like we could talk about Rena talking about the important they give thanks to the Shrine's God, Oyashiro-sama.
Oh, yeah. We do need to bring up Oyashiro-sama. Just
the guardian deed who brings about both miracle and curses. So that sounds pretty frightening.
Yeah. Oyashiro-sama is nice. We're fine with Oyashiro-sama here on this podcast.
I think this is the first time we hear the name Oyashiro-sama.
Yeah, I believe so. Mm-hmm. I don't believe we've heard the name before.
Oyashiro-sama is the guardian god of Hinamizawa.
Mm-hmm.
I do want to mention right after this feed, there's a strange title card narration and for some reason the chapter title.
That is only in the console version.
Interesting.
Do you want to go?
So it was added by the mod as well then?
Yes. And the reason why it's in the console version is the console version is a more traditional branching narrative thing. Mm. And so when you get to a specific chapter branch, it will play a little title card to tell you what you got. At first, I was a bit anxious. Mm-hmm. Hurting someone was something I'd never even considered. Nevertheless, the anxiety then gave place to loneliness, doubt, and more. And then, that wicked murderous intent eventually took control of my mind. The boy took the first step towards an unrecoverable daily life, not even realizing that he was walking into the abyss. Oni Kakushi, a tragedy born from the desire to believe. Are those tears of repentance or tears of resentment?
Yeah, I was wondering what that was about. So that's just kind of saying, well, you've hit this arc.
Yep, that is the poem for hitting the start of Oni Kakushi. What you can kind of tell that the console version is kind of being written from the assumption that you know this already. Especially like because it is a branching path narrative rather than just a single novel.
That seems kind of like it was a confused method to do.
Oh, it is. And apparently there's even some really bad endings you can get that are like very poorly written.
You remember something like the ignore everything ending is just a complete disaster?
Yeah. So Keiichi decides to ask Tomitake for more info on the dam incident. And here's a lot of spooky stuff that we will get into later.
And just the woman he's with just kind of is just this very serenely smiling woman. But she definitely likes to talk in about disturbing things.
Yeah. She's the kind of person that you are probably like, do you have a true crime podcast? You seem like the kind of person that would have a true crime podcast.
She definitely seems to like scaring Keiichi a little bit. She smirks at him a lot. She has this demeanor about her of, I know something that you don't that's a little bit scary.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as he's completely panicked, they immediately laugh and tell him that, like, here's all the things that we left off, which is what makes it this just a ghost story.
Yeah.
It's kind of brutal.
Yep. But so after they're done scaring the shit out of a kid, the club shows up to give Tomitake his punishment for losing in their competition, which is they all write some heartwarming messages on his shirt.
Except for Satoko, says, I win.
Well, that's Satoko. Would you expect her to not be a little shit about this?
Nah.
And afterwards, Keiichi walks home and he still feels uneasy from all of the scary shit that Tomitake and his lady friend told him.
Yeah. Well, to go a little bit, they said how the festival has a curse and a murder every year. So it was kind of like saying, is it going to happen this year? And that's what he can't shake.
Now we hit the general discussion. New characters. Now I think we can finally talk about Tomitake some.
Mm.
He's definitely an odd guy. Like, he's supposed to be in his late 20s, 30s, I think.
I actually thought he was a little bit older than that because he has kind of grayish hair.
Maybe. I don't think I'd call it grayish. I think he just has like his hair color, like you can't see much of it under the hat. And most of what I see is just brown.
Mm.
Or you can just use the steam sprites and make him look weirdly buff.
Yeah. Like literally an action figure.
Yeah. it is a weird trait of the steam sprites where all the male characters just look freaking jacked.
He's always wearing dog tags, so you assume maybe he has a military history and that's why he has a cut figure.
Yeah, but like with the original sprites and also a little bit of the console sprites, he still like looks at like he's let himself go a little.
Not even so much. He just looks a guy who is reasonably well built as opposed to someone who's spent his whole life building himself up.
Yeah, yeah. That's the thing. Like, he looks like a bodybuilder in the steam sprites. Yeah.
Otherwise, he just looks like someone who clearly has lived an active life and probably is reasonably strong.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's there. He doesn't live in Hinamizawa. He shows up like for about a week every year. He's apparently amateur photographer who takes pictures of birds.
I think it's actually a week every season.
Something like that. And so then the other character that we met this chapter is this mysterious woman whose name we did not get.
I will say that about his age. At one point, he says to Mio, and like, I'm not that old. Men develop a mysterious flavor in their 30s. So,
yeah. Tomitake is hanging out with this lady, and it's kind of subtly implied that they're probably an item.
Yeah.
I will say Mio, like, teases him, say, your guest is waiting for you. It kind of makes you suggest maybe that's what Mio knows all along.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So let's talk about this woman a little, what she looks like, how the different versions render her is another thing to talk about.
She is wearing a green and pink outfit.
She's got a green sweater vest over her pink shirt.
This is one where there's a big difference between the sprites. Like in the original, it's a pink shirt, a pink collared shirt that she buttoned up all the way. And she's wearing a green light coat with a big ribbon over it.
And the ribbon is sort of clasped by this weird golden cross.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's her most obvious accessory, I think. And the thing that defines her the most are the kind of, she's got these kind of weird orange eyes, and she has that weird accessory with the ribbon and the golden cross.
Like this, the steam spray of her actually isn't that much different. It kind of changes the shape of the shirt and the way the jacket looks. And like most steam strides, I think they over-exaggerate. I'm trying to make it look like an attractive figure. It's kind of the same thing with Tomitake.
Yeah, she has some really great smirks. You can't see it in the podcast, but if in the original sprites, she just has some really great facial expressions that look like really haughty smirk.
I mean, in the original, just kind of looks like she's always just smiling a little, but both steam and remake, they really push that one. But the weird thing about the remake sprites is they completely change her outfit.
You mean console sprites?
Yes, console sprites. She's wearing a green button-down shirt over a very low-cut pink top. Like, in this one, she's not wearing a collar shirt at all. She's basically exposed her entire collarbone down to her cleavage, which is just a weird change.
And she also does not have that ribbon or the golden cross, which is a... I notice it. She... Anyway. Oh, and she also has got long blonde hair. That's another thing we need to point out.
Yeah.
But that's really about it. We don't know her name yet.
Yeah, and her personality is just she likes this ghost story.
Yeah, she likes ghost stories. That is her personality so far. There's also one new song in here. So this new song first plays during Cotton Drifting. It is called Nearsightedness to Parallel Taido, which I believe means quickening.
It's a very, as you can hear, it's a very peaceful piece. It's kind of these piano runs over sound effects, implying just kind of soothingness or is it because it's for the cotton drifting, it's drifting along as well.
It kind of has a kind of mystical quality to it.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like I think it feels appropriate for a festival that is supposed to be reflective.
Mm-hmm.
And mystical in some way.
Yeah, like, reflective is a very good way to describe how this theme is used. Like, yeah. It's very introspective.
Like, Keiichi compares Gotten Drifting to, like, lanterns being set afloat, so it kind of has the same peaceful tone to it. Mm-hmm.
This is one of my favorite tracks in the series, actually, so...
I believe it comes from the later part in the series, and they just brought it into the earlier one. So the original version is called Quietness. I don't have it immediately available. I believe it's sort of like used in the same general context and general kind of theme. I forget how it sounds off the top of my head, though.
Now we will start talking about specific stuff that we wanted to kind of go into more detail about.
As always, we'll start with the club games.
So let's talk about zombie tag. What are the rules of zombie tag, first of all?
Well, someone's in and they tag them. The person's tag join them. And they really get in on acting like zombies to a vague
thing. Yes.
Rika particularly.
Yes.
I'll eat you gently.
Yes.
Rika's extremely good at that creepy little girl thing.
Like, she must practice it a lot.
I mean, I feel like she is born for the role. I don't know.
It's just more of a thing where because she's kind of cute and reserved that
yeah.
When she knows that when she says something that's a little bit dissonant with that, it hits pretty hard.
Yeah.
And like Satsuko, she's a lot more precocious about certain things, so she can be very good at saying things like this, causing disturbing reactions.
Mostly, this is just a series of escalations as Keiichi tries to come up with new plans to avoid becoming it.
Yep. His first bright idea is to, since Satoko starts out as it, to start a rumor on the schoolyard that Satoko's parents are looking for her at the front gate.
And at the same time saying that, I don't remember who he tries to draw Mion there. The idea is like, I'll get them to run to each other and so Satoko will get Mion.
So,
yeah. So the ongoing theme here is, since there's lots of other kids wandering around, Keiichi and then the others start using plans like to get the kids talking to draw them out.
Yeah.
So after he hides up on the roof of a shed, kids suddenly start saying horrible rumors about Keiichi. Like, did you hear this?
Yeah. So I funny. Hear Keiichi steals panties.
Mio, and it's clearly from Mion, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. Mion has just like clearly been turning this whole thing around and being like, okay, I see what happened here.
His house caught fire. A jumbo jet fell on it. The police have come to question. Then it gets worse.
Yes.
Yeah. This kind of is a continuation as well of previous chapter 3, where there's a lot of talk of Hinamizawa is not a place to be trifled with.
It's like he's saying, wait, that means there's zombies everywhere. This is the horror of zombie tag. Yes.
And so, Keiichi just really is afraid of, oh, if this escalates too much further, I'm going to be branded as a pervert for life.
As, like, Ren, he sees Rena meet Rika, and Rika suddenly attacks Rena. It's like, oh, no. Rena says, look, Keiichi. So she's asking for help, but still draws the others to him.
Yep. The final sequence of leading up to catching Rena is Keiichi does a big elaborate Gundam reference, and one of the kids is clearly a Gundam fan and criticizes his Gundam reference.
I just love, this is the start of a war for independence of Zeon. The only one person to defeat the Red Comet. Like, you're literally saying she has to fight Char.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's like the kid going like, I thought the cannon didn't work on the Comet Empire. And he's like, that's a different person. Like, one of these kids has potential.
I think that one's just kind of like a wink, wink, nudge, nudge to the kind of otaku audience.
It is clearly an otaku crowd reference, but like,
and I just love all the kids have cornered Rena in the shed. She's like, I can't pilot a mech. Yes. get in the Gundam, Rena.
God damn it.
So Rika Satoko, who I bans there, and Rena starts begging cutely for her life. And Keiichi pauses, like enjoying the moment, and the bell rings.
Yep.
And so she won.
Yep. Keiichi loses because
he was not ruthless enough.
He didn't try to win at all costs.
The really funny thing is then we find out Mion was never captured and one noticed.
Yes.
Which says that Mion decided from the start, I'm going to pretend to be captured. I'm going to spread lots of rumors about Keiichi, so I'm hunting him and just count on no one figuring it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Keiichi just falls for it hook, line, and sinker because
Satsuko falls for it. Think about it. Yeah. Like that.
And Rika.
Well, Keiichi falls for it hook, line, and sinker specifically because he targeted Mion in the beginning.
Well, yeah, and I think he... Probably also specifically making Satoko and Mion go meet is why he thought it worked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the fact that she committed to the starting up the hunt by, I'm going to cross this line and get Keiichi slandered.
Yes.
Yes.
He's like, she wouldn't, which implies she did that just for the fun of it. Right? Even if it's part of her strategy, in some ways it was kind of just for the fun of it. I don't believe there was any mentioned penalty game for that, except that Rika and Satoko tickled the crap out of Keiichi.
Yeah, basically, yeah. Yeah, let's talk about President now.
So, President is, like, what type of game is it?
A trick-taking card game. You're trying to empty your hand, and basically, like, you have to, what is it, going up in increasing number order, and also with the number of cards you play at the same time?
Yeah.
I didn't really follow the game itself very well. Yeah. It is one where the hands go fast and you just kind of see them announcing when they're finished. So
there's specifically a very large number of house rules and variants for this game.
Like at the start of this whole sequence, they even are like, okay, what are the house rules we're playing with? Apparently
the Japanese names are Daifugo or Daihinmen, like Grand Millionaire or Grand Pauper.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the penalties because they get pretty funny.
Yeah, this goes through several rounds. In fact, at one point, it turns into a montage. We start missing rounds, but...
Yeah. So the first round, Mion loses and has to pet the school principal, who is bald, on the head.
Yeah. And for some reason, the principal is extremely powerful and will fight back.
Oh, yeah. He is apparently has training as a martial arts master.
He also is bald and kind of sensitive about it. So yep. This is basically an invitation to get your ass kicked.
Yeah. Also, as we mentioned earlier, but like Mian was trying to slip a no penalty in right as people are like, and by the way, no penalty is like no penalty.
Yeah.
As like Rika said, no penalty. We're not forbidding that. And Satoko catches Mian with that in her hands.
Yep. Second round, Rena has to talk like a maid. And so she starts... And the winner of that hand is Keiichi. So she starts addressing her friends as master, greatly enthusing Keiichi.
I don't know Japanese well enough, but I know she says Gochishin-sama.
Yeah.
And that, is that really the only change to her speech? Is just she keeps adding that to call people?
Yes.
Pretty much, yeah.
That is basically the stereotypical maid addressing their
She gets a little employer. Bit more polite as yeah, well.
So does she change to a Keigo level is also what I was wondering.
Kinda. I couldn't catch it, but
I do not know Japanese enough to know, but that was kind of what I was wondering. Mm-hmm. It does sound like she just speaks shy and speaks, and then at the end just says, Kochushin-sama.
Yep. The third round, Rena has to remove one item of clothing from her top and bottom portions of her body. And so she's
got
her PE uniform.
Yeah. Keiichi's like, wait, what? It's like, would we have let her strip if she wasn't wearing something underneath? I can't tell if he's embarrassed or disappointed or both.
And Keiichi, I think, is like, I didn't write that one.
Yeah, I'm like, sure, bro. actually, I'm probably guessing that one.
No, because he says, who did write that? Give that man a Nobel Prize. Either way, I don't know.
Oh, yeah. No, he's totally full of shit.
I was like, Satoko, he thinks that Satoko says, no, it'd be an Ig Nobel Prize. I think so. Yep. I was thinking again.
Yep. Fourth round, Satoko has to speak like a little sister, and she starts calling Keiichi Oni-chan.
Fifth round, Mian has to change into her swimsuit.
Mm-hmm.
School swimsuit, I guess, specifically.
Yep. Sixth round, Rena has to let the round winner rest their head on her lap.
By the way, at this point, Keiichi's calling himself a god and saying he has ascended.
Yes.
Yep. I have assembled a harem.
Yep. And keep in mind, these penalties are sort of like sticking around. They don't have to stop doing them. Mm. And so Rena's legs are bare and Keiichi is laying it on her lap as she calls him master. So,
yep.
As I say, I'm saddened by the thought of a man having no end to his desires.
Yep.
he keeps switching between debauched and weirdly philosophical. And yes. I know this is much later to Higurashi, but I really started thinking of Konosuba at this point.
Oof.
Like whenever whenever Kazuma gets way in over his head.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, Risa, you said you wouldn't mind dying. That can be arranged.
The next two rounds, Satsuko and Mian each lose. Satsuko has to wear a collar and Mian has to start fanning Keiichi. So, like, just imagine this whole scene now.
Harem scene, let's be honest.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Assuming he's still laying on Rena's legs, possibly.
Yes, yes, absolutely. 100%, that's what is still going on. And then, for the 10th round, Rika has to wear cat ears, a bell collar, and a cat tail.
It's concerning that this was available. At this point, by the way, it's kind of going through a montage saying there was another loss, and this happens.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
And then, at that moment,
Rika's had enough.
And so Rika activates Rena's cute mode.
I have one trick left. Like, if Rena must, because Rena's already cute moded over Cat, Rika's like, if Rena must, she can take me home. And so it's like, after she beats Keiichi.
Yes.
Yes.
I just kind of want to read Keiichi's narrative here because it's
go for it.
Great.
Go for it.
Would it be that easy? Opposing me was the same as opposing God. I'd teach them their place. How preposterous that Rena can't defeat Eep? For a moment, I didn't know what was going on. The 52 cards danced and flowed freely between Rena's hands like the machinations of a master magician. In the middle of those flowing cards was Rena's ecstatic expression, her head bobbing round. My whole body knew it already. I was going to lose.
And then
I skipped Rena's line there because it's funny, but not needed.
So... yeah, Keiichi gets completely demolished by cute mode Rena. There's like, it isn't even described how it happens. It just happens. The moment she enters cute mode, Keiichi is done.
Yeah, the next line is literally Mion saying she's out. It's like, oh, I was spent. Yep. And I just like he's acting sad. Like, I got to dream for a moment. I'll take the penalty. What is it?
All.
Every penalty up till now. Yep. Let's go through this.
So Keiichi has to wear a girl's swimsuit, the cat ears, tail, and a bell collar, and has to act like a maid.
And another collar, apparently.
And and another collar.
And talk to him like a little brother somehow.
Yeah. Talk like a little brother.
And then the group sends him off to pet the principal's head, still dressed up.
Yes.
Women, it was specifically the girl's swimsuit.
Yes. What is a man?
Yeah, he just walks to the principal's office like that. The principal freezes solid and is apparently just...
Like, the principal froze for a second because he just couldn't process what he was seeing.
Yeah. Yes. He actually falls under other Hitchhiker's Guide, somebody else's problem field for a second. Yep. It was too ridiculous. But then as he goes towards the principal, it's like, I heard what sounded like a three-time sound. Is three gauge super?
Yep.
What does it mean to be a man? And then cut away, boom.
Die 1,000 deaths. Watanagashi, 5 demon firefight.
Wander around the stands just randomly competing at bullshit.
Yes.
Yep.
This is my favorite because this is them suffering openly just to win.
Yes. And
Rika's just kind of like, that can't be enjoyable that way.
The takoyaki, which they swiftly mentioned has no octopus in it. Like,
yes.
She burns his mouth. Like, no, you need to wait for the old ones that are cooled down. But those can't be tasty, says Rika.
No, it's just all about eating as many as possible, even if they're bad.
Then next, shaved ice, and now brain freeze problems. Like, they're bragging, like, you need to warm it up with your body. Cage's like, no, I can just eat it. Did you just take water out of the goldfish tank behind us?
Yep.
He's like, that really can't taste good. He just says again.
Yep.
Then there's cotton candy, where...
Half the group knows, just like, just grab the candy in your hands and crush it into a small ball to eat.
Like...
Can't taste good.
It really can't. I'm just imagining that. I'm just like, that is like the worst texture imaginable.
And I don't even like cotton candy. I feel like that would just be a wad.
Yeah.
So then Rena decides that she wants something that doesn't involve food. Thank you, Rena.
I think because it combines with this one, we should also add that we need to go into our record of Rena's cute reports.
We'll go. That'll be a little bit later. I believe I have a whole section for the Rena's cute report.
All right, we have to describe. The point is, Ren is just openly controlling. Is like, bring me something cute.
Yes.
Yep.
Bring me the cutest possible thing.
Yeah.
So, Mion and Satoko go off to find their thing while Rika and Keiichi stay back.
Both smirking at each other. They know exactly what they're going to use.
Yep.
It's pretty great.
So, Mion comes back with a bunch of random advertising signs.
I think it's like supposed to be like for old products.
Something like that.
Yeah, like they have mascots on them or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a curry, snake coil incense, a vitamin supplement. It's like you see these triangle signs on barbed wire fences, and Rena starts steaming.
Yep. Satoko brings back a homemade anthropomorphic corn at a grilled ear of corn stand.
Yeah, from the Lady Society roasted corn stall. It was a really badly done sketch by a housewife.
Oh no!
Like, so this looks bad. Like, yeah, and Rena loves it even more. Like,
yeah, it is more effective than Mion's. By what basis?
and then that's amateur hour done. Let's get into the real players.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Rika just plays the "I'm a cute girl" card.
She backs up and starts waddling towards her, falls on her face.
It makes her, like, over large sleeves and the shrine maiden outfit.
And then just makes a cute little noise.
Meep.
So I just kind of imagine we have Rikakus, Shrine Maidicus, and we have Omerikachius, Renas.
Oh, no.
Yeah. The meep meep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very much so. We have cute mode coyote here.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, coyote. I can't make
that's it. Terrible.
That's pretty terrible. Is. I like it.
And it hits hard.
It hits really hard. Like, we're talking full nosebleed explosion, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I literally think that, like, Rena just explodes.
Yes. And so then it's Keiichi's turn.
Yep.
This is... By the way, I love Rika turning to Keiichi smirking. Beat that.
Yep. Yes.
He describes her cold smile as being terrifying. Sometimes I see a demon in this girl.
Yes.
Yeah, Cage is like, I can't. I show you something cuter, but I can't show you in public.
Well, I just think he says, I want to take you aside. And so
he says it's too crowded.
Yeah, it's too crowded. I can't show it here. And then so he takes Rena behind the tent. And the two come back a little bit later. And Rena is completely flustered.
And dazed. Like, dazed. Not all there.
And just like, and they're like, what did he show you?
It was Keiichi's furry little seal.
Yeah.
And next thing that happens, Mio and Sadako smash Keiichi to the ground.
Oh, yeah. And then it's revealed that Keiichi has this little homemade keychain that is of a fur seal. It's definitely not his dick.
Rika knew about it, so she saves him from, let's be honest, I think he was about to die.
Yeah.
They were going to kill him, and they were going to roll him into the river and say, we purified the sins of the village.
So, is Keiichi the sins of the village, I wonder? Hmm.
Yeah. And I love that Mion and Sadako start blaming each other. It's pretty fun.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
So then Tomotaki shows up with Keiichi sprawled out on the ground by the ass.
So, yeah, basically he was just embarrassed to show it because it's not, you know, something
it's not manly.
Manly. Yeah.
Funny thing is, they don't say clearly who won.
No. I mean, technically we don't get a clear winner until the next game, which is the shooting gallery. And technically we only get a clear loser. Yeah, well, and a clear winner, actually, yeah.
Right, but the other games we kind of know who each won each of them, at least a little bit.
The shooting gallery.
Yep, Tomitake shows up and joins in on this.
This is probably one of the first times of Ryukushi's incredible drama for a silly scene.
Yes.
Yes.
And not only that, though, like...
To say two words for later, cross-counter. This is almost on that level.
Oh, yeah. This is also a bit thematic in the sense that it is everyone has to work together to solve the problem.
It's your typical carnival stall where there's a clear lure that's not going to be able to be taken.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. In this case, there's this massive teddy bear that is clearly not capable of being knocked down by just like regular ass shooting with the
dumb little cork gun.
Yeah.
It's quite clear the first time someone tries it that it barely moves when it's hit. The corks, it's far too heavy for what's being done. You need supreme luck.
So Mion goes first, and she's basically just like, I am not going to risk any of this.
Big candy boxes.
She just shoots three little candy boxes, and cool.
Because the goal is whoever has the best award doesn't necessarily have to get the bear.
Yeah.
The bear will clearly make you win.
Yeah. The loser is the one that has the least amount of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Satoko, she takes two shots of the bear, and then it's just like, fine.
Doesn't move.
Gives up, goes for a small item.
So she hits a candy box. I don't want to be at a zero or I'm going to lose.
Yeah.
So Rena
is gone cute mode.
Rena's gone cute mode because naturally the bear is cute. Why wouldn't it be? Mm-hmm. But even being able to just like give her perfect accuracy.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, she perfectly headshots this bear three times.
Yes.
It just twitches. It wobbles. But that's about it.
Yep.
But at this point, you're getting a crowd excited.
Yeah. Mm. Her display is so valiant, the stall owner is just like, I can't let you go away empty-handed. He gives her a consolation prize of this little box of candy.
Yeah, but I can't call that noble. That's the, if I'm too stingy, they'll see I'm a crook. So here's your little reward.
Also, very specifically, he only does that for Rena. He would not do that for Tomitake or Keiichi.
Well, I believe later he finally does it for Rika as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But next is Tomitake.
Yeah. So Tomitake shows off some real shooting skills.
I said he does have dog tags. It's possible he's trained.
Yeah. He basically, like, he has a single gun, and he's rapidly reloading it and firing at a very quick pace.
I believe he's literally shooting from the hip. Like, they say as much.
Yep.
Yeah. Like, he's just going, bang, pop, get bang, reload, bang, reload, bang, reload, as fast as
possible. I love the sound effects. They're going full gunshot and loud slam.
Yeah. At this point, it's just like, heightened sense of reality. They're using real gun noises for these dumb cork guns.
Yeah, it's really amusing because it's definitely the first example of going full anime bullshit narration for something kind of mundane.
Yeah. Then finally, Keiichi decides he has a new plan.
Yeah, even though Tomitake has zeroed himself out and you could just avoid losing, Keiichi doesn't want that.
Yeah. And by the way, this whole time, the really cool competition music is playing. What's it called? Swinging Seesaw?
Actually, it switches. It's goes through several pieces. It starts that.
Yeah.
What is Swinging Seesaw? Is that the, what was it replacing again?
Digital Network.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the resource uses the old song, so it had to compare.
Okay.
But yeah, it's basically playing this really dramatic competition music for this whole time.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I would expect nothing less.
So Keiichi goes up there and says, two more guns.
Yep. He shows off three gun style. Is he holding one in his mouth? I don't know.
I mean, that does sound difficult. Like, how do you aim that forward and pull the trigger?
But basically he shoots them all really close to, together, because he can just... Because
even though Tomotaki was holding the extra corks, he couldn't reload fast enough. Yeah. So somehow Keiichi's accurate enough, he could pick up and fire three guns within seconds of each other, all at the right spots.
Yep. Oh. But Keiichi, in his own sense of nobility, even though he does knock the bear down, he says, I didn't do it all by myself. Everyone hit it, and those small bits together brought it down. This trophy belongs to all of us.
And he ends up giving it to
Rika.
Of course.
Of Mio going, right, this is all of us working together, Rika. Me didn't hit it a single time.
Yes.
So,
by the way, if you look at the manga, they picture in there, the bear is as big as Rena.
Yes.
So this is a ridiculous prize to hit with a cork gun.
And if you look at the anime, this scene is not in there. We'll talk
about that. That's why I only mentioned the one that mattered.
Yes. Well, I'll talk about that more in the Godcast.
Now, Rika takes her turn after all the stuff with the festival and that. And
it's kind of off screen, right? Like,
yeah. They basically described that there were no good prizes left. She missed, and the guy gave her candy too. So yes. Tomotake loses.
Yep, Tomotake loses, and he gets the penalty of everyone writes him a friendly message on his shirt. Nice.
It's not too bad. She literally said, ha, last place on hers. Yeah. So the Q report has two sections as we begin this official work.
I am officially declaring this Rena's Cute Corner.
This is pretty wild because it starts fast. Like, it starts with, we already knew about the colonel.
Yeah.
So we need to switch over to stuff after that.
Yep. So she has a bunch of other random mascots in her house, as we found out.
The description's like, the cake shop's mascot, Little Licky, the Totalmon in front of the pharmacy, the amazing flying elephant atop the department store, some sort of mailbox that she stole from somewhere.
Oh, no.
And all sorts of stuff in her room that's smaller.
Probably the mailbox ended up in the trash dump or something like that.
Maybe, because he says, won't you get in trouble for that? And she just goes, cute.
And so,
Keiichi.
Keiichi decides to ask, do you find the Statue of Liberty cute? And Rena says, yes, she wants it.
I just think of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Turtles in Time, where the opening narration is like a news report, and then giant Krang's robot body swoops down and steals the Statue of Liberty.
Yeah, I have in my notes, I want a spinoff of Phantom Thief Rena stealing cute things from around the world.
Wait, is Rena secretly Carmen Sandiego?
I wasn't able to make a version of the song.
I don't blame you. That song is hard. I'm not going to ask that of you. Obviously, we were talking about the first seal before. I feel like that's a pretty much of a given.
I mean, I believe, obviously, Rika again, consistently.
Yeah, yeah. I'm pretty sure that's just like an ongoing truth of this story, is Rika is always cute.
Satoko mostly when she's crying, which is a little worrying.
Yeah, that is a bit worrying. And then, of course, just signs.
Yeah, generic product signs.
I think the signs had mascots on them, at least, though.
It actually doesn't say that. It just says they're different products. They described them as a sort of diamond signs that would be put up on a barbed wire fence. Things Rena can do in cute mode. Amazing card tricks, like literally.
Yeah, like the way it's described, I'm just like imagining one of those casino dealers who's like actually able to just like shuffle between two hands, like without.
Or just line up the cards and triangles, flick them and they fall over.
I'm also imagining that she stacked the deck while she was at it.
Oh, absolutely. There's no question of that.
The cards go wherever she wanted.
Yeah.
Yep.
The cards were dancing under her will. Absolutely, this was how she cheats at cards.
So she has ultimate hand-eye coordination, proven by the fact that she is a terrifying sniper that can take headshots in the seconds.
Yes. So is that a good collection of cute thing or things she can do in cute mode?
Well, we already established in the first few chapters her ability to strike at light speed from massive distances away. So I don't think there's anything new beyond those.
All right. Well, we were going to keep on monitoring the things that Rena can do in cute mode.
Rena, we suspect her to be a threat to world peace, so we need to know what her capabilities are and what her patterns are.
She could also be a hero. She could be the one who saves the world.
Oh, no. Batman vs. Superman joke. There's even a 1% chance that she turns against me. It's taken as absolute certainty.
Oh, no.
Well, remember, if someone were to kill you around here, she'd be the one to do it.
No. Definitely not.
Tomotake, shut up.
Yeah, Tomotake needs to shut the fuck up. So let's talk real quick about something that comes up in the middle of this conversations about the history of the village.
Yeah, we've kind of given us hints about it, though the girls don't want to talk about it too much. So we have heard a lot, but they talk about the dam project that was forced.
Yeah, Mion on the way home one of these days. Basically, Keiichi asks, "Oh, did anything weird happen at the dam site? You know, trying to fish for information.
Anything about violent?" Thing.
Yeah. And she's like, "Yeah, we had this Miggle protest.
Did any violence happen?" No.
No. But so a big thing that comes up is the Kurobe Dam.
Yep.
Which.
And so that's basically the real life event that the Hinamizawa Dam is intended to evoke.
Yeah. It was a big project, I believe, in the 60s that displaced a lot of people. When it formed its dam reservoir, and like it's treated as this big successful architectural project by the Japanese government,
but apparently 171 people died during it.
Yeah,
just building the damn thing.
Yeah, during the construction, and it's basically because it was a gorge that is, was it another one that was displacing people as well?
It was displacing a lot of rural communities when they were building it. As we learned last set of tips, this one was going to displace five villages, or the Hinamizawa Dam was going to displace five villages.
Which says there must be several villages up in this valley.
Hinamizawa is just one of them that's all like crowded around Okinomiya.
Like all the picture of it, there are like very high hills and mountains along the edges of the village. So.
Yeah, yeah.
This whole thing is kind of intended to evoke that actual situation that happened. This was in the post-war period. And Japan was quickly rebuilding and modernizing.
Yep.
And they needed a lot of electricity power, and dams were a way to stimulate the economy and provide clean energy in the future. And so it was very popular to build dams, except if you were one of the people being displaced by the government's whole eminent domain thing to build them.
Yep.
Apparently, the Kurobe Dam is still in usage and sort of a popular site these days.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a tourist destination, kind of like the Hoover Dam in America.
And with that, I think we've come to the scene, the big scene that we want to do for this episode, which is the chat that Tomotake and this mysterious woman have with Keiichi at the festival.
Yep. And I think this is the first time we get stuff that's really creepy for more than just a moment with Tomotake taking Keiichi too seriously.
Like they mentioned this memberman, they go on to say, "Well, didn't you hear about the curse?"
The year following the dismemberment, on the day of the Watanagashi, a man from Hinamizawa who had supported the dam fell off a cliff overlooking some rapids and died while he was on vacation. Unfortunately for his wife, the body was never recovered.
He supported the dam construction, even though he lived in Hinamizawa. At the time, there were whispers amongst the elderly saying it was Oyashiro-sama's curse.
The woman chuckled mischievously again.
Then, next year, the night of the Watanagashi, the shrine's Shinto priest died suddenly from an unknown illness. His wife drowned herself in the bog that night.
The shrine's Shinto priest? You mean he was from the shrine here? The woman nodded.
There was a rumor amongst the villagers that they weren't able to quell Oyashiro-sama's anger.
Then, the year after that, again on the night of the Watanagashi, they discovered the battered body of a local housewife.
Housewife? Up until now, all these mysterious deaths were people involved with the dam. or had connections with Oyashiro-sama. With that in mind, could the housewife have been involved in some way too?
Exactly.
She stated slyly. No, it was more menacingly.
One of the victim's relatives, you see, was connected to the younger brother of the dam supporter who fell to his death 2 years before.
The younger brother is still alive, it seems. But it did bother him quite a bit. So he moved to the neighboring town.
For a while, I stood there with my mouth agape. The battle over the dam construction with Hinamizawa's future at stake and the murder at the center of it all. That was all I knew, and that was all I wanted to ask about. But that wasn't all there was to the story. Homicide, body disposal, accidental deaths, terminal illness, suicide, fatal beatings. I'm a pretty level-headed person. I don't really want to believe in curses. But the freakish deaths happened every year on the day of the Watanagashi, and all of them were related to the dam construction? It was easy to dismiss each of them as coincidences by themselves. But when you put them all together, dismissing all of them as coincidence would then defy logic. I don't believe in curses, but every single year on the day of the Watanagashi, somebody or something makes it happen. Without fail. The woman chuckled again, as if she picked up on what I was thinking. It felt like she was saying, maybe there was. Maybe we frightened him. Stuff like that. I felt embarrassed at being read so easily. I pressed Tomotaki to continue, a bit of impatience and irritation in my tone. Then? So someone died the next year, right? Who was it that time?
I wonder. Who do you think, Keiichi-kun?
The hell? The way he said it didn't agree with me. So the sarcastic tone ticked me off. Don't avoid the question. I'm serious here.
Hey. Calm down, Keiichi-kun.
I realized when she tried to calm me down that I had been panicking.
We weren't trying to avoid the question, Keiichi-kun. It's just, when you say the next year, that's...
That's today.
I get this image of her just, I don't know why, putting on the mask from Courage Cowardly Dog going Ooga Booga at
him. God, I love that scene, though. That worked really well. I like that a lot.
So I like Dewey Keiichi's nervous narration. I thought it sounded pretty good.
Yeah.
I actually really like this scene, and
it's a ghost sample.
This is the ghost story that starts like the actual like spookiness of the whole story. Like,
yeah. Shockingly, it wasn't a dark joke from Keiichi that triggered it.
No, Keiichi just like, please talk to me straight about this stuff. What is going on? And then this big list of, hey, check out all this weird shit that's happened in this village.
And on the same day every time.
Yeah.
And I will say, this still isn't the whole story, even Onikakushi. We're going to revisit this list later with even more disturbing context. Like, that's going to be the next episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I actually think that this is one of those examples of the visual novel adding a lot to it compared to, say, the anime, because I think this hits a lot harder with Keiichi's internal narration.
Oh, and
with him freaking out about it internally.
Keiichi's internal narration is like so key to the vibe of Higurashi in my mind.
Like, yeah, because a lot of this, during this whole thing, he's kind of thinking about, well, hey, I was curious about this. I pushed this far, and then I heard about it, and... Should I regret hearing about this? Should I have learned this at all?
And that's a theme we're going to keep seeing.
Mm-hmm. Like, should I have actually bothered to learn anything is like Keiichi's perpetual question.
I like that he's so drawn into it that he loses track of the number of years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What happened next time? That's today, dude.
Yeah. But I mean, that's also kind of like they led him to that question. If you're thinking about it in the terms of like it being a ghost story, it's just like, no, you set it up so that the person is just like, what happened next? And it's like, that's tonight.
To be continued.
And then after that, they kind of are like, okay, hey, look, we kind of withheld a little bit of information from you. It turns out that, hey, the cops have actually investigated all of these things.
Yeah.
And they're not really connected.
Like, the housewife that was murdered has a a suspect in prison. The priest had a chronic illness. But
yeah, there are mundane explanations for everything. Yeah. Ghosts aren't real.
They kind of tried
by to the way,
use it a little bit.
Just, yeah.
I think they kind of felt sorry, just like, oh, hey, I think we went too far messing with this kid.
Yeah.
And by the way, yeah, he's so flustered as it goes through. It's like, okay, what happened next year? Oh, wait, that was this year again.
So, yeah, I think then we're up to the tips discussion. Yay.
Yeah, like the episode ends with Keiichi trying to go to sleep, just trying to say, as long as nothing happens, this will be nothing to worry about.
Yep.
So tips. At the end of chapter 4, we get what kind of name is Rena. I believe that's the only tip we get for that chapter.
Yep.
And so we learn that Rena is a nickname, and it's even rendered in katakana in Japanese, which is usually used for, like, special words or loan words or things like that, words that don't have a normal Japanese meaning.
Not like foreign names?
Foreign names, too, yeah.
Okay. And, like, this one's pretty straightforward. Her name is Reina.
Yeah, her real name is Reina, but they insist that Keiichi call her Rena instead.
That this whole scene happens while Rena's not there. And they there's a little bit of pressure. Like, Rena says call her Rena, so we call her. Like, yep. Only strangers call her Reina. You understand?
Yep. Just like, hey, please read the context of our words here.
I want to know what the Japanese was here. It's like, if I had a nickname and you call me that, what do you want to be called? Con man said what I had. What the hell?
I forget what it was. I remember noticing that it was a decent translation, I guess, but I don't remember.
And for some reason, they start making jokes about Keiichi and Mion putting her on trousers back, and then Rena lays them both out immediately.
True.
And I think it's just Keiichi trying to sound cool and edgy.
Mm-hmm. It might be a reference, I forget.
Yeah.
If you know the answer to this, write in.
Yep.
The first time that actually happens, I'd be really impressed.
We also get this one line in this tip that I like. It didn't matter what her real name was, only what names we use between us. Rena Ryugu is Rena. She's nobody other than that. So then we have the one tip we get from chapter 5, which is the community notice.
This one's pretty simple. It's just like, here's a list of things happening at the festival.
Yep.
Like how different people, like the mayor, the Sonozaki family, all just say their things are doing.
So a few things that are of note. Kimiyoshi was the name. We saw the name Kimiyoshi before on the Onigafushi Defense Alliance propaganda flyer last episode.
Mm-hmm.
So now we have a bit more context about who he might be. And Sonozaki is a name that's treated as equally important here.
Mm-hmm.
So is Mion's family important?
And we haven't heard much about him.
We haven't heard much about them yet, no.
But the next set of tips is a whole set of 4, and there's a lot to say here.
So, let's go into them one by one.
It is worth noting the tips have little thumbnails. The first 3 tips all have similar ones. Looks like a sheaf of papers, which tends to be like documents or historical documents.
These are after chapter 6, when
we
just got the context about all of these things from Tomitake.
And these appear to be like short news briefs.
Yeah, they're newspaper articles about these events happening. And so the first one is titled Hojo Couple's Falling Incident.
Now, if you're paying attention, that'll be important, but let's go ahead and just leave it there for a moment.
Yep. The next one is called The Terminal Illness Death of Shinto Priest Furude.
And that, again, both of these are just very dry descriptions. How couple fell, one body is recovered.
Yep.
How a priest suddenly died and his wife's gone missing with a farewell note.
It's mostly reiterations of what Tomitake and his lady friend told Keiichi.
And it keeps noting that when there's a body missing, there's a difficulty. Like a typhoon made it hard to find the bodies that fell.
Mm-hmm.
And that the swamp will make it hard to find the one that disappeared in it.
Mm-hmm. The third one is the housewife murder.
This one actually threw me because I opened up. It shows the same newspaper background. Just says in parentheses, it wasn't reported in the newspaper.
Yeah.
Yeah. With cricket sound effects, might add.
Yeah. Like, we don't have any information about the housewife murder, but it is kind of worth noting the names that are on the other two.
I don't want to call it all the way because that's something for next episode.
We're going to talk about it more, but just think about those names real quick.
And the last tip, well, I think this is something that we can sort of leave as a last moment for this episode.
It is a radio log.
Yes, and it shows a picture just like of a street corner, and the voices, when the voices is clearly coming through, like, it sounds like a dispatch radio. Very, very typical.
This is Okinomiya Station calling Unit 3. Unit 3, please respond.
This is Unit 3, loud and clear.
Backup is heading your way. Hold position until further instructions. Over.
Roger. Unit 3 acknowledged.
requesting no headlights, requesting radio silence.
Station, the doctor has arrived. They want it carried away. What's the order? Over.
Acknowledged. Leave it to the doctor.
Affirmative. Understood. Backup has arrived. Shouldn't we let him take a photo first? I think the Vic is done for.
That's everything for this week. So what do we all think so far?
Well, I think we've reached the end of the setup, or at least a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Keiichi had his moment with the Harbinger, and so now we've hit the horror movie trope, and we can move forward on.
Yep. Yep. Next week, we're covering chapters 7 through 9. Same deal as before. Once you see end of chapter 9 in your save files, you're good.
I think that's all we're going to do today.
Yes.
Join us next week when things go off the rails.
Yes. Okay.
So until next time, I'm Matt.
I'm John.
I'm Jared.
And remember, a good story is best enjoyed with friends.
Thank you for listening to Backlog Dialogues. If you liked our show, please leave us a review that Rena would find cute. If you want to dig into our dark history, you can find our archives at www.backlogdialogues.com. Join the discussion on Twitter at Backlog Dialogues or on our Discord server. When They Cry and all associated properties are owned by 7th Expansion and Manga Gamer. Console versions by Intergram. Please support the official release.
I just can't remember when I pledged for the Kickstarter. Is D&D campaign setting everything is food, including you, the tasty lands of silver plates.
That sounds like a vor fetishist's.
Funny thing is, not exactly. It more is just like, do you want to do a weird food world? And it's just, by the way, this includes depictions of graphic violence, self-harm, and cannibalism. I understand what you're saying, but it honestly is more just like it's trying to be a weird, here's like anthro food thing, like it's an old cartoon.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sure it does draw people of specific interest.
Yeah, there's a genre of things like that that is referred to as candy gore. And
I have completely lost track of this conversation. Gochujin-sama, I think.
No, it's Gochujin-sama.
Gochujin, yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah. Thank you.
Anyway.
Isn't it Gochujin-sama that Shita is not saying that was a good meal or something?
Yeah, you're right.
Gochujin-sama is
I'm
that.
Done. You can't call the cops on a ghost.
Can't call the cops on a ghost, Chloe.